Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Fiction. Science fiction. Horror. Fantasy. Crime. LGBT. Thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCB 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 1050 AM Palm Springs.
You're on KKNW 1150 AM Seattle and KCAA 106.5 FM Los Angeles, part of the NBC News Talk. I'm Al Warren, and sitting on the is Kev Thompson.
Good morning.
It certainly is. Good to see you finally awake.
Hey, it's probably just a pre-workout still.
So. Yeah. Well, now just for the measles has had a huge increase in Washington State, now over 175 cases in the state alone. So, you know, vaccines. Come on, people. This was nipped in the bud in 2000.
Yes, lead kills measles.
Well, not only that, see, a lot of them now that are being in the hospital, are 17, 18-year-old males. That's bad for your reproductive system.
True. Well, so is mumps.
Yeah, and that's breaking out again, too. You know, people need vaccines. Come on.
Well, Al, do you really think it's because they're not? I mean,
Yeah, in Washington State now, we're at only 71% getting vaccinated now. And in places like Vancouver, Washington, right down by Portland, we're down to, 35% are not being vaccinated. So 65% are getting the vaccines.
But do you really think it's because the push to not get vaccines, or people are just, I mean, I hate to say this, but just too lazy or too busy or just,
could be a combination.
I hate needles.
It could be a combination. But the thing is, I remember, but mind you, this was in the 60s. when we were in school, they just give us the shot in school. Like, I think it was second grade.
Yeah.
We just
Absolutely.
All lined up, go to the gym, and they all shoot you up. And mm-hmm. They're still doing it at school level, I believe. So why, you know, they're choosing not to, because it's given to you unless you say no. So,
well, they're also doing it at employers. Like, you know, I work for the sheriff's department, and we're exposed to, you know, diseases every day, you know, tuberculosis, measles, smallpox, you name it, people come in with it, and it's a big push there. Plus, I'm in the military where it's mandatory. I mean, you walk through a door, the needles just shoot out of the wall. You know?
Well, that's a conspiracy. They're really just that's their mind control over you and the policing, you know.
Oh, well, I probably got chips all over in me.
Yeah,
didn't.
The deep state's got you. Now, the other thing we want to talk about. Oh, speaking of that was funny. A funny news story. You know, falling into needles. A guy fell onto a squirrel, and had to go to the hospital and have it removed from his butt?
A squirrel?
Yeah. Now, first of all,
no, that's what they always say.
Squirrel, where it gets up your ass.
I know that. You know, I used to work in nursing years ago, and people would come in with the most bizarre things internal. I fell in the shower, and it was there.
Yeah. How do you fall naked and then have the squirrel? I don't know. I don't even know.
Don't ask. Look who you're asking. Look at this stuff that's happening.
I know.
Happened to
Mr. Durable. now, and I saw the Queen movie, Bohemian Rhapsody.
Oh, now I have heard rave reviews and I've not gotten to watch it yet, but I was a huge, huge Queen fan.
I'm disappointed.
What?
I'm disappointed. I was
You know who turned down that part? Was Sacha Baron Cohen.
Yeah. No, I think the guy was really good in the role. Like, I'm disappointed in one, the fact that a lot of the mid music they did themselves with that guy, and he can't sing near what. He doesn't do it justice on to the real Freddie Mercury. The other thing is, too, they missed a lot of parts. And because I was such a fan, I have a lot of the videos that Mercury made of his home life. And it just, there was a lot of things that they skipped. And so if you know a lot about the band, you might be disappointed. Not in the acting, just in how they skipped some years. Pretty, you know, it was... When you see it, you'll see what I mean, being a fan. But you know, they did a really good job. You know, I mean, and he was a great actor. Nothing wrong with that.
Now, I remember listening to the cassette over and over until literally I wore... It was Queen the Works. You remember that?
Yeah, the cassette. You mean for you, 8-track.
Well, yeah. Well, my dad had the 8-track player, but I had the Walkman that was about the size of my laptop here. But I wore that sucker out till you could barely hear it anymore. I loved that.
I had it with 78. No. Now, now we're going to go back in history again, but a little bit further back than Queen, 70s. We're going to the 60s. Now, important time, November 22nd in 63. That's, of course, the JFK assassination. Mm. Really unique, too, because the last book I submitted to the publisher, the one on the Moores murders, that couple killed intentionally after Kennedy was killed. That was kind of bizarre. They did it because everybody was so enamored, and that's what everybody was talking about on the 23rd. So they went out and chose one of their victims. So it's just interesting how, for most people, it was a major upset and depression, while others like that were going out.
A trigger.
Yeah, they thought, this is a great time to kill.
Yeah. You know. People somehow you're socially justified.
Yeah, and you know what? I just can't get over. I'm surprised by people's actions every day. But we've got a special person here. Now, she's written two books, and the main point of the books is that her grandfather was one of the people that filmed the JFK assassination. It wasn't just Zapruder. So we're going to talk about her grandfather and that film and putting the pieces together. So let's welcome Gail Nix Jackson. How you doing?
I'm great, and good morning, and I'm so honored to be here.
I am, too.
You can tell I'm from Texas, can't you? I'm trying really hard not to have a Texas accent, but...
Oh, just be you.
It's a lost cause.
No, it's okay. It's all about personality. You know, I've got my Canadian accent that comes out all the time.
Well, I didn't notice it except when you say out. It's kind of like oot.
Oot and a boot. Yeah, I'm oot and a boot.
But Minnesota people do that too.
Yeah, I get accused of that all the time. You're from Minnesota or you're Canadian?
Yeah.
And I tell them I'm from Fargo. No.
That's not what it's about here.
A boot.
It's not about.
Yeah. I'm oot and a boot. So, you know, the other one you can get is Canadians say again. Like they always, it's not again. They pronounce the A and everything. The A and
it's
U.
True, isn't it? Again.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah, they pronounce the A and everything. And same as color.
And us, if we use a long I sound, even when I say I, it's more like ah, like tight. It turns into like four syllables, you know?
Yeah, it's crazy. And then, of course, we've got the French. You know, if you learn French to start, then things are really difficult. Yeah, but that's a different story. Now, how did this all happen? So your grandfather, Orville Nix, was at the Dallas and watching the president. And what kind of camera was he using? Was he using a film camera or just for pictures or movie?
My grandfather, let me give you a quick little background. I mean,
sure.
He worked for the General Services Administration, which is a government, another government entity. And essentially, he was the air conditioner repair guy, which means he was like the glorified janitor. But he had a fourth grade education. He tried so hard because he had to quit because he, school to help his family with money because he had a brother with epilepsy and, that's a real long story, but it was very sad. So he worked his whole life in trying to better himself. I mean, educate himself. I mean, because he couldn't go to school. So one of the ways he did that was making friends with people at the GSA, which in his case was Forrest Sorrells, who was a key person in Dealey Plaza that day. That was one of my grandfather's dear friends. And Forrest had told him early, I mean, before it was even in the papers, that, look, Orville, if you want to take your grandkids to see the president, here's the best place to go. So he made made plans for me, my sister, and my brother to come down there with my grandmother and see the president. Well, my mom, I mean, having kids 5, 3, and 2, she's like, oh no, I can't. Yeah, you know, so I'm being the oldest, I got to go. And we were to meet my grandfather down at Dealey Plaza at noon. Well, the crowds were so large. Even as a kid, I remember, my goodness. I mean, there were people everywhere. And we couldn't make it to get to him. It was just the throng was too thick. So we waited for him at the H.L. Greens. And we saw the motorcade go by, but we weren't there in Dealey Plaza. My grandfather was. Now, as he was taking the pictures, he had bought this Keystone camera, and my grandmother, who worked at a cafeteria, was always upset with him because he was always spending money on cameras and film because he just thought it was the most wonderful thing to see airplanes flying, and, you know, that was high technology to him. So he had bought this camera for this event, and he didn't know how to work it that well, okay? And he used what many of the naysayers, when they, from the Warren Commission, will talk about the Nix film, and they will say, well, Orville Nix didn't know what he was doing. He used indoor film. One of the things I want to bring out to you guys that I don't ever talk about, and I should, is that Roly Zavada, and I'm not sure if you know who that man is, but he is the expert for Kodak. He's the one that goes and does all the speeches about film and all about Kodak. He's the expert. I talked to him at length for years, and he said, Gail, one thing that you never talk about and which I find odd is that your grandfather used indoor film, but the Nix film is very dark. And if y'all have seen it, you will see it's a dark film. Well, when you use indoor film, I mean, this is logical, you know, it's going to let in more light because it's indoor film. So really and truly, if you look at the Nix film, you would think it would be over-lightened because he is using indoor film, but it's not. It's very dark, and that's very strange, you know? Have I lost you guys already? And you're like,
No. Actually, we're tracking.
Yeah.
I mean, no, it's very odd. If you'll look at the Grassy Knoll area, which that's the claim to fame for the Nix film. It's the only film that shows the Grassy Knoll in its entirety. So when he scans over the Grassy Knoll part, it's very dark. I mean, you can't see hardly anything, and that's odd. At least through Mr. Zavada, the Kodak expert, he said that shouldn't be that way. So I don't know. I mean, what happened there? There are all of these rumors and all of these arguments about alteration, about Zapruder film alteration, about Nick film alteration. And one of my dearest, dearest friends who I think is knows more about the Nick film than I do, he's from Ireland. His name is Chris Galley. He says, Gail, I just don't think it was altered. But what I want to tell you guys is that my grandfather from day one, when he turned it over to the FBI, because they had issued an edict saying any film that you find to all the processing plants in the area, any film that shows anything having to do with Dealey Plaza must be turned over to the FBI immediately. So when my grandfather's film was developed, which, by the way, you guys, was a week after the assassination, he had so much film still left on his camera, he didn't want to go take it and have it developed, and he didn't even really know that he had assassination footage. He didn't know. Are you there?
Yep.
Okay.
No, first of all, back to your grandfather. Yeah, I totally understand the fourth grade education. My father had six, and he had to drop out. So that was part of the times.
Yeah. Right. That's
that
right.
That was very normal. I think a lot of people know that. I mean, the kids nowadays don't have a clue, but, you know.
Right.
But that was very common. So it doesn't mean he was not intelligent. It's just a lot of people.
Oh, I agree. But you know, to him, he was.
Yeah,
it
men just had to go to work and take care of their family. I think with my father, his father died in the war, so he quit school to help his mother survive.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
And a lot of men were tradesmen back then. You didn't necessarily need that super education because you learned a trade.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, doing things from your hands.
That's what he did on his own, but he was picking cotton. You know, when you think about, you get these stereotypes in your head about who were cotton pickers and who were, but you know what? It was every person who needed a job. It didn't matter if you were male or female or what color you were. If you needed money, you did what you had to do. And in my grandfather's case, and my grandmother's too, as a matter of fact, they picked cotton. So,
that's hard work. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Now, so on this camera, so, when they took the camera, like he handed in, did your grandfather actually see something or say something that to you?
Yes.
Okay, so what was his interpretation of what would be on the film?
Well, when they called him, Dynacolor was the processing plant that was processing his film. And they called him in the middle of the night, because they worked all night doing these things, and said, Mr. Nix, I mean, he was a really good customer. Like I said, he was always spending money on film. It would just upset my grandmother to no end. But they knew him very well, and they said, Mr. Nix, you've got assassination footage. And he goes, I mean, because he really, really didn't know that he was taking the film. And my grandfather was so tall. He was 6'5". So, and this Keystone camera had a grip on it, kind of like a gun, kind of. I mean, and when he heard the shots ringing out, he clenched that grip. I mean, he was so, as you would when you were white knuckle a steering wheel, you know, when you're in the rain or the snow or something. And so he clenched it, and it was because he had it clenched and had it at his waist and was running that he got the footage. That's how. And if you ever see what's a first generation copy of the Nick film, this is how you know. It looks like the motorcade is going uphill. And that wasn't uphill. It was because of the way that my grandfather was holding the camera. Now, when he watched it all night at Dynacolor, and when I say all night, they must have watched it 30 or 40 times. And he just couldn't believe it, that he saw what he saw, and, you know, that you could see the assassination. And though it's not as graphic as the Zapruder film, you can still see the plume of you know, blood and gray matter and all that occurs at the kill sites, and it's terrible. And when he took it to the FBI the next day, it was Monday. This was a Sunday night. It was Sunday. Well, I should say Monday morning early, but Sunday night for those of us who sleep. So He took it like a few hours later to the FBI because, like I said, he was friends with all those guys, and they said, "Well, okay, we'll give it back to you, you know, tomorrow. I mean, we just need to make a copy for ourselves." And they didn't. They didn't return it to him for 4 days. Now, that, of course, in our family, has always been a why did they do that? I mean, why would they need to keep it so long? But back to what we were speaking of earlier before the show started, we didn't question. I mean, Americans did not question our government in those days. They just didn't. I mean, maybe some of the protesters that was before Woodstock, and that was before, you know, a lot of protests. But maybe later they began. But at that time, people who were of a certain age did not question what the government was doing. Well, when they gave the film back to my grandfather 4 days later, he said, "Well, it's different. Why does it look different?" And I remember saying, smart mouth, even at a young age, Papa, how do you know that it's different? I mean, you just watched it on a wall. I mean, how can you say it's different? And he said, because it's jumpy, because it's darker, because it's not what I saw. And I said, but you watched it on a wall. I mean, maybe there was something on the wall that made it look weird, or maybe, and he would get really upset then and say, look, it is my film. I knew what I took. I know what I saw. That is not what I saw. So I have always wondered, as has every member of our family, did something happen to his film while the FBI had it? Did something happen? And my grandfather was convinced that it had, you know, that something. But, I mean, to me, it's a little bit illogical. If you're going to alter my grandfather's film, you're going to have to alter the Zapruder film. You're going to have to alter the Much More film. You're going to have to do all of it, right?
Right.
So in our case, it was easy. I mean, they have lost my camera original film, my grandfather's camera original film. There is no original to take to Japan or, say, to Sweden, where they've got awesome technology now that could show, is there someone on the know? I mean, we could see it if we had the camera original, but we don't because the government has lost it. So
how do you lose that?
Yeah, how do you? Yeah.
Well, that makes no sense. So they just lost it. Yeah, that's
it's evidence. It's evidence in an open murder case, and they lose it. Now, what would happen? I mean, think about it, you guys. Which is disgusting and horrible too, but say there was a rape case and you had DNA, but someone loses the DNA. What happens in a court case? You know what I mean? I mean, yeah. Not only do they get in lots of trouble, but you have to worry about conspiracy, collusion. Is there someone bad in the police department? But yet we didn't do that with the Kennedy assassination. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense to me. Does it to you guys?
No. No.
Not at all.
No. It's not, because it was way too big of a case. Everything that
right,
everybody's mind was on nothing but Kennedy at that time.
Right.
So
now I will tell you, over the years, and God knows I have done this for, well, honestly, my whole adult life, I have been chasing after this film, and I will tell you that I spoke with most everyone on the photographic committee with the House Select Committee. Everyone who was on the photographic committee. And do you know that, and unfortunately most of these people have now since passed away, but there's still a few alive, that every one of them told me that they never even saw an original film. They saw frames. Now, how are you going to do a really good job of determining what happened that day when you don't even have the first evidence, the genesis of evidence? I mean, how? It's just a joke, you guys. I mean, all of it has been a joke every single time. And what are we hiding? What is being hidden from us, you know? And why are we not asking why? I think it would explain a lot of what's going on in politics today if we would better understand 63, you know?
Well, Gail, what do you think that they're hiding?
I think that they're hiding somebody on the Knoll. That's what I think. My grandfather died in 1972, and till the day he died, he would say the shots came from the stockade fence. That's what he called it. There's a picket fence back there, and he called it a stockade fence, and we call it now the grassy knoll, and the fence is behind it. But he swore to it. In fact, in 1967, CBS came to Dallas, and by that time, my grandfather had been getting weird phone calls and strange people knocking at his door. And I mean, he was never threatened. I don't want you guys to think that there was anything nefarious that way. But
no, it sounds like California.
Strange things.
Yeah.
Strange things were happening, you know, that he couldn't make sense of. And this man who I told you loved technology. I mean, to him, the telephone was a big deal. And when we were kids, if we didn't answer the phone at the first ring, I mean, we got yelled at because you don't leave people hanging. They're wanting to talk to you. Well, by 67, if we answered the phone, we got in trouble because he had gotten that many strange phone calls. So he went ahead and put his number as when undisclosed number, you know, an unidentified number where people couldn't call him. But anyway, by 67, CBS came down, and they had just, the Warren Commission had just closed. I mean, and CBS was, of course, wanting to say, oh, don't we have a great government? Look what the Warren Commission decided. Lee Harvey Oswald did it all on his own. No. And so they would ask my grandfather, they said, okay, Mr. Nick, you were one of the men who took a film of the assassination. What did you see? Where did the shots come from? And every time, you guys, every time, I was there, my sister was there, my brother was there, he would say, over there at the stockade fence, and the director would yell, cut, cut, cut. And this went on two or three different times. And by the fourth time, the man who was the director, his name was Bernie Birnbaum, he came over to my dad, my grandfather, and he said, Mr. Nix, where did the Warren Commission say the shots came from? And my grandfather said, well, they said it came from over there at the school book depository by that skinny little communist. And they said, well, okay, that's what you need to say. And do you know that's what he said? Because they told him that's what he needed to say.
Hmm.
So
now, Dale,
I have seen this stuff firsthand, you guys, you know?
Well, Gail, I think that I'm a pretty open-minded guy. Why can't both be true? I mean, if I was to plot a presidential assassination, I would not put all of my eggs in one basket. Either, Lee Harvey Oswald or a guy. Yes. No, this is Kevin.
I totally agree with you because I believe there was more than one shooter. I have never believed that Lee Harvey Oswald did this on his own. But I'm also one of those people that don't think he's an innocent. I don't. I don't think that he's a hero. I think that he knew exactly what he was into and maybe got in there a little too deep. But I don't think he did this alone. And I'll tell you what else I don't think. I think the assassination and the cover-up are two separate entities. I don't think that they went hand in hand. I think the assassination happened and put whoever was in charge, and I have no idea who was in charge, but whoever was putting this together wanted, I think there was some sort of rogue element and caught them off guard. So they had to come up really quickly with an answer as to what's going on because they were scared that we would blame Russians or Cubans and that we would go into World War III. There's a part of me that truly believes that our government was trying to help us, but they just did it in such a Keystone Cop type way. I mean, it's not right. And we were lied to. And I think that we can take hearing the truth. I think we can, you know?
Yeah.
Now your family video, what do you think that it contradicts, according to what we know today about the assassination?
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Because well, I really don't think that everybody today is buying the one shooter theory.
But that's what the story was, Al. That's what it was in 67 and 64 and 65. I mean, that's what it was. And there are still plenty of people who believe that the Warren Commission got it right. But if they're going to say that Lee Harvey Oswald did it and did it alone, then there couldn't be anything on the Knoll. And there couldn't be any other shooter. And there couldn't be a head going forwards and backwards. I mean, I don't care what all these things say. There's too many studies that show that, you know, it had to have been a shot from the front. And on top of that, I believe my grandfather, and not only did he say there were more than three shots, he thought there were four or five. And that two of them happened, one right after the other. Like, bam, 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 bam. You know, I mean, that's how he heard it.
You know what? And he's not the first to say that. If I remember right, and you guys correct me, Al, if I'm wrong, that there was one of the officers who were in the escort. He described three to four shots.
Hardest.
But then they tried to re-explain that as, well, no, there was an echo against the buildings and what have you.
Exactly. Because Dealey Plaza is a lot like New Orleans. It's like an upside-down bowl. So, I mean, because of the pergolas and the, you know, it does echo. It does. But, I mean, if you're there and you're dive bombing into the grass all around, like all those people were that were standing out there, they know. And why would we not listen to these people? I mean, why? I don't understand that either. They never even called my grandfather into the Warren Commission to testify? They had him go to the FBI and give his report to a couple of guys there, but he never. How can you take a film and not be and testify in front of a huge governmental commission? It's all a joke, you guys. It's all.
Do you think they were just trying to calm the crowd, like make people, you know, it was the same as when after Hitler's killing himself and then all the rumors of Hitler still being alive in South America and all the talk. And do you think it was just the way of the government trying to calm
USA? I do, and I give them that little bit. I will give them that little bit. But from day one, Katzenbach and Hoover and Bill Moyers were talking and saying, we have got to let the public know that we have got the man, and it was Lee Harvey Oswald, and there can't be any question about it. So when the Warren Commission got together, just like the FBI had an edict to grab all the movies or stills that came during the Dealey Plaza days, so did the Warren Commission. Their job was to prove that Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone. That was their job. And if we would all understand that, and we would all look and see, okay, what were the parameters that the Warren Commission was given? What were they supposed to talk about? What were they supposed to find? You will see that, I mean, it's just like at work. You know, if I'm working at a company and my boss says to me, Gail, we need you to give us the, let's use numbers since I'm so bad at it, the estimations for taxes for the next year for all of our Southwest companies. Well, what, I'm not going to look in New York, and I'm not going to look in California. I'm going to look at the Southwestern areas, right? Mm-hmm. Well, it's the same thing with the Warren Commission. They were given the edict to prove that Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone. So they didn't look at anything else. They just didn't. So
what are we left with?
We don't understand that. We don't.
What are we left with? This? I mean, because now, okay, so at the end of the day, there was more than one involved, more than Oswald, and the commission was there to make sure that the crowd stays calm, and they sold that Oswald was the lone shooter, and time passes. So what are we left with in the fact of whoever it was that was behind the assassination, whether you believe it was LBJ or if you believe it was CIA, FBI, Russians, Cubans, there's so many mafia.
Right.
Yeah.
No matter
right.
who it was, the FBI would have to be covering for that person
exactly.
if they were altering the evidence and hiding it.
That's right.
So,
that's right. And
so
that's
now,
what bothers me the most, Al.
Right.
There it is. There it is.
Do you think it was the FBI as a whole unit, or is it some rogue elements? Was it from the leadership down? Like where?
I think
where
it was the leadership down, and I think it was key people he could trust. I think it's the same with the CIA because they had to work hand in hand. And I think, just like there is today, there are certain people that have security clearance and know things that maybe their best friend doesn't, who works in the same company. I mean, I do, and I don't like that my government lies to me and uses the national security as the reasoning for it. What national security could it be? What could it be? And if they're going to lie to me about this, what else are they lying to me about? I mean, let's just use our common sense, you know? It bothers me a lot. And that regular people like my grandfather, who was a patriot, I mean, he truly was. I mean, did everything that he was asked to do by his government, gets treated this way, and it's wrong. This is not how we do as educated, civil Americans. It's not. And we should question when our government goes astray. We should do that. That's what a true patriot is. It's someone who wants us to really stay great. Well, we can't be a great America if we don't ask questions when we see something going wrong. You know? We can't. How are we going to fix it?
Right.
I'm a fixer.
Yeah, no, that's, you know, that's the importance of freedom and freedom of the press and freedom
exactly.
of speech, right? So
I agree.
But so where, I'm just trying to think, okay, so this is over 50 years ago. So why hasn't this come out through that channel somewhere over all of these years as we've had a huge change in government several times and a huge change
I don't
in members?
Right, and why do the presidents keep declassifying these files? Why
right.
won't they just let them all free?
Yeah.
What? See, that right there, forget my grandfather's film, okay? I'm not going to, but let's just take it out of the mix. Just that, it should be enough for people to be questioning why. I mean, why? Can we not know what happened 55 years ago? Are we really that dumb that we can't take it? Are we that emotional that we can't handle it? I mean, what is the answer here? And I think that we're all smart enough and grown up enough to handle it. I think that we can. Are we going to be happy? No. But how are we going to make things better if we can't fix our past? I mean, if we don't learn from our past, we are destined to make the same mistakes over and over and over, and that's what we're doing. You know?
Yeah. So, I just wonder if what exactly they think it would do. Would it make people rebel against the government if something LBJ, let's say, back then did? Would that cause?
I mean, do you think that it would? I don't know that we're at that place anymore, where we would rebel and we would protest. I don't know. I think now, after this many years, it could be more a learning. I mean, look at the Holocaust. I mean, the Germans, God, it's horrible. That's horrible. But the Germans didn't act like it didn't happen. They shared and learned and said, God, how could we be such terrible people? And I mean, we need to be able to do that too. We need to be able to heal, because there are terrible people amongst us. There are.
Right.
And
yeah.
Those of us who think that they're not, I mean, there are.
And oh, yeah, we're constantly faced with things all the time.
Right.
That, you know, like we were talking about that earlier. I mean, there's a lot of people out there that just do bad things. I'm just trying to wrap my head around an idea.
Yeah, to say, why does it matter? Why does it matter?
Because none of those people are alive. You know, Johnson.
Right.
Like, how is it going to affect anybody? It's not like it's 10 years after and all these people are still here.
Right, right.
Which
kind of answers the question the other way, too. You're right. Since all these people are gone, why can we not know what the truth is? And then there's the argument, well, why do we care? I mean, why should we care? And my answer to that is because, like I said, if we don't know, we can't learn and we can't evolve into better people, into a better government, and we will keep making these same mistakes, and we will still be getting hoodwinked by politicians who say one thing and do another. And I shouldn't even just say politicians. I should say people, because it's people that do this, you know.
Yeah.
And as far as the Nick film goes, I have always said from day one, if I were to find the camera original, I would use my own money and go have it analyzed. And if it shows there's nobody on the knoll, well, you know what? There's an answer, isn't it? Because
right.
God knows we don't have a lot of answers to this. So there would be one. But if it does show that there was someone there, then we need to know that too, you know?
Yeah. The JFK books and research and things that have been produced over the years, is there any that you find favorable in your opinion or that you like the best?
Oh, you know, that's a great question. I mean, I like the books that the authors go straight to the source. I don't like the theory books. You know what I mean?
Right.
I think this happened. So Dayton Fonzie's The Last Investigation seriously is one of my favorite books. And, I don't want to talk about, there are some books that I loved until I spoke with the author and found out that they had never even spoken with these people they were talking about. I really lost my respect over some of those. But Gayton Fonzie, for sure, did the right. William Matson Law, he writes books that he talks to. He goes to the source. Brian Edwards.
I think that's important. I think that even when I write books, you know, it's so different. I watch, I do true crime, serial killers, and when I see different shows on it and documentaries and stuff. And then when you go out and actually in the field and meet the people and get the police records and the court documents, you find out half of what's produced is so secondhand, it's not even true.
Exactly. Exactly. So for me, I'm a Pollyanna idealistic truth seeker. And the truth is, not like, you know, it's not always very pretty. But I want to know what the truth is. I don't want a sugar-coated. I don't want a fictionalized. I want to know. Yeah, you know. And not only that, I want to have evidence. I want, if someone tells me, okay, in my second book, I talked to the sons of Robert Surrey. Robert Surrey was General Walker's right-hand man. He's the one that made those signs wanted for treason that they passed all out in Dallas that day. That was Robert Surrey, okay?
Right.
I spoke with his sons, and they told me the strange, oh my gosh, you guys. You need to buy that my book just to read the strange stories, because I was like, no way. They said that when they were kids, and they were older than me, so they were like 12 and 15. So they were old enough to know that they would go with their dad to go shoot out in what now is Plano, a big suburb of Dallas. But back then, it was nothing more than flatlands. And they would go shoot with General Walker, their dad, and Lee Harvey Oswald. Now, that's what they told me. And they said, and our job was to pick up empty cartridges. Now, you guys, this is Texas,
Yeah. Okay?
I mean, you walk in any field, and you're going to find a cartridge, I mean, out in a field, even today. I mean, you will. I mean, why would you be keeping cartridges? Well, then you think about it, and you go, well, now, wait a minute. And I didn't write this in the book. I didn't. I mean, because what did I just tell you? I don't like theory.
Right.
But me, I mean, I'm thinking, well, what the heck? They found those thick cartridges on the sixth floor, right? They didn't have Oswald's fingerprints on them, right?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe there's something to this. So when I write that in there, I just leave the story as he told me, and I verify what I could. And one of the things that I verified is that they had built in Oklahoma what they called a doomsday home, along with a member of the American Nazi Party. Robert Surrey was the secretary for the National American Nazi Party. And they built this doomsday home up in the hills of Oklahoma. And in it, there was turrets where they could look out the tops and shoot. There were holes in the walls where you could shoot, put your gun out there like an old John Wayne movie, fighting against the, you know, the Native Americans. I mean, it's the same thing. And there really is that place, you guys. It's there. I mean, it is there. And it's for real. So I'm thinking, well, okay, that's true. And now let's see if I can verify. And I went through and verified most everything. I mean, there was no way to verify shooting with Lee Harvey Oswald. Lee Harvey Oswald's dead. General Walker's dead. Their dad is dead. And it's just these two boys. I mean, who now are in their late 60s and 70s. But that they told that story to me, I'm thinking there's a lot more to what was going on in Dallas during that time than most people know. I mean, the Klan was still alive and well. The American Nazi Party had a stronghold in Dallas. General Walker was doing God knows what. I mean, with members of the Joint Chiefs of Staff who were in Dallas an awful lot during the weeks before and the weeks after the assassination. And it's all very, very interesting to me. I mean, I tend to lean towards there was a military influence here. I tend to lean towards, I don't say that LBJ did it, but the biggest joke the week after the assassination was, what was LBJ doing when President Kennedy was shot? And, of course, the answer is he was ducking. I mean, that's what the joke they told in Dallas during, you know, right after.
Yeah.
So I think we need to know what really happened here. I really do. And if anything, just that we can fix history. I mean, we don't need to be revising history with fictionalized accounts of what people think happened. I mean, we need to know, you know, and have true evidence. Because like I said, this is still an open case. This could still be tried, you know?
Yeah. What's your next move? You did the second book. Where do you go from here?
Well, you know what? I mean, since then, I'm very fortunate in that two university professors have chosen my books, both of my books, to be required reading in their political science and courses at college. That's a big deal to me. I may not be a best-selling author, but by goodness, I mean, these professors think that this is important, you know?
Yeah.
I'm working on pieces of puzzle volume 2. But the big thing right now is, like I spoke about earlier, this resolution that was signed by me, and I'm nothing. I mean, but the Kennedy family members, the Martin Luther King members, several actors, and I don't know how you guys feel, but actors are just actors. I mean, that doesn't make them any better or worse than any of us, but they get a lot more media attention.
Yeah.
We are all begging and the government to reopen the case and to do it with a bipartisan flavor and to treat it like it should be treated, like a legal case. I mean, not a commission, not a conference where people give their theories and their hypotheses, but use all this evidence that I'm late in line of finding the things that so many other people before me have found. They're true, that are evidentiary and could be used in a court of law, you know?
Yeah.
That's what we're asking for.
We had RFK Jr. on the show, and even before this, he was always on this, a side of conspiratory things, that things are not as they seem, and especially with Sirhan Sirhan and his own father.
Uh-huh.
But I just wonder if Congress is still going to act on it or do anything, take it serious is what I'm thinking. I don't know if they will.
You know what I think, Al? I've got a 19-year-old son and a 22-year-old daughter, and we were talking about this the other day. They are great. And they said, you know what, Mom? I think it's going to take your generation and the generation before you dying out.
Yeah.
and then maybe those of us who are younger and know that this is important, there will be politicians who feel the same way we do and will make it happen. I don't think it's going to happen when they're still. And you know what? They may have a point, because if you look at our political system, how many guys, and it is mostly men, I mean, there are a lot of women now, but how many of them are over the age of 65 or 70? Seriously.
Yeah.
I mean,
and, too many.
And they may know things that they don't want America to know that they know, you know, and they might not get reelected if we know those things. So they might have a point about that. But I do believe the younger politicians and leaders are agreeing with what I'm saying, that, yes, we need answers, and we don't want to do this anymore. We don't want to have a government like this anymore. It's bad. It's wrong. And how can we say we're better than China or we're better than Russia, who propagandize their citizens, when that's exactly what we're doing too, you know?
Yeah.
Let's not be hypocrites.
Yeah, so, yeah. There's always two sides, isn't there? So.
Right. That's right.
You know.
I got on a soapbox. I'm so sorry, Al. I didn't mean to do that.
That's actually what we do here. We use lots of soap.
Yeah.
Well, at least Al does.
Yeah, it's important. It's important.
Yeah.
Now, if you go to the Kennedy things in New Orleans or Dallas, the different...
I do not.
No.
I do not. I am what I suppose some of my peers would call a bit self-righteous. I don't want to... How shall I say this in a kind way? I don't want to be associated with people who I feel are trying to interject themselves into such a horrific event in history for some sociopathic reason. If I didn't have to be a part of this, Al, I wouldn't be. I mean, it's terrible. It's the stories and the things. It's horrible. I mean, why would you want to, you know, be a part of this every day? Yet I am, because I'm trying to find my grandfather's film. I truly believe he was there for a reason. And I truly believe that his film is important. And why no one else, well, I shouldn't say no one else. There's a lot of people that are on my bandwagon, but why it's not more important to the world, it stuns me, but that's okay. I mean, look at the things like y'all were talking about, measles vaccines, and, you know, people are scared. They don't want to vaccinate their kids because they're scared that the government may have put something in a vaccine, or they can't trust the pharmaceutical companies. I mean, I don't know. This fear that we have that seems to be pervasive in our subconscious is scary. And I'm going to tell you, I think it goes back to what we're talking about here, that there's a part of us that a lot of us don't believe what the government's telling us, and we can't trust them. And that's not good. If you can't trust your government, I mean, you need to be able to, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But if we got some answers, maybe we could. So
we'll hold on.
I don't
and
do
wait.
A lot. I don't do a lot of conferences and things. What I do, I speak to colleges. I do radio shows like with you guys, and I try my best to help other authors or researchers who are trying to find answers in case I may have some in my notes. You know,
yeah.
That's what I do. Wow. So.
Well, it's certainly been a pleasure. It's been great talking to you. I think you do things very well, and we're going to have your books on our website, so people that listening can just go one click and purchase. And you have a website as well that people can go to, right?
I do. Yeah. It's GailNixJackson.com, and I spell my name GAYLE.
You got it.
NIX. Yeah.
Well, again, Gail, thank you very much for taking the time today.
Hey, Al, thank you for having you too, Kevin. I like you guys. I hope I get to meet you someday.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Do you ever feel like your brain is on overdrive and your mind is constantly racing? The plans, worries, and to-do lists are never ending. Calm can help your mind take a break from the noise by softening anxiety symptoms in the moment and helping you cope with day-to-day stressors. Calm is the number one app for sleep and meditation, giving you the power to calm your mind and change your life. Their meditations range to fit your needs each day, from anxiety and stress, relaxation and focus, to building habits and taking care of your physical well-being. They even have expert-led talks on topics such as tips for overcoming stress and anxiety, handling grief, improving self-esteem, caring for relationships, and more. For listeners of the show, Calm is offering an exclusive offer of 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/stressless. Go to calm.com/stressless for 40% off unlimited access to Calm's entire library. That's calm.com/stressless.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production.
production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.